I greet you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
It's good to be with you this evening. Tonight we are going to reflect on what it is to be church. We've already pointed out to you that some people make a serious mistake and think of church as a building. They walk down the street and say, look at the beautiful church. But much like the synagogue in Nazareth, which probably didn't exist at the time of Jesus, for the town had been destroyed by the Romans, with a place of incredible poverty, the last place on earth you'd think that someone from heaven would go. So a synagogue must have meant a gathering of people on what used to be a street corner. In many parts of the world right now, by the word church, that's exactly what you mean. People who cluster together in the name of Jesus for the sake of someone else. This building is a marker of you. You've heard it 1,000 times over. We are the church, living members of that one body. But in our contemporary world, at this particular intersection of time, our church is brokenhearted. Not simply because of the scandals and the hurt within the church, but also what goes on in the world. It breaks my heart when someone uses the name of Jesus and the name of Christianity to hate another person, or to condemn another person, or to think that because we're Christian, we have some kind of special privilege within the world. That's why we need to listen to the words of Jesus. The greatest among you would be the one who serves the least. Pope Francis, of course, says that the church must be merciful. So tonight, I suppose we are celebrating what it is to be merciful. Not condescending, but welcoming. What it is to be people of radical hospitality, what it is to be authentic disciples of Jesus, even when our hearts are broken. Here's a prayer I would like to share with you. You'll probably recognize it. Help me, O God, that my eyes might be merciful, so that I may never suspect or judge from appearances, but look for what is beautiful in the souls of others and come to their rescue. Help me, O Lord, that my ears might be merciful, that I might give heed to the needs of others and not be indifferent to their pains and sufferings. Help me, O God, that my tongue may be merciful, that I should never speak negatively of others, but only have a word of comfort and forgiveness. Help me, O Lord, that my hands might be merciful, filled with good deeds, that I may only do what is good for others and take upon myself the more difficult task. Help me, O Lord, that my feet might be merciful, that I may hurry to assist others, overcoming my own fatigue and weariness. Help me, O Lord, that my heart might be merciful, so that I myself may feel the sufferings of others and refuse my heart to no one. In a word, help me, O Lord, to be Jesus. Holy Community, praise now your God.
Please just join us in singing Beyond the Days on your song sheets. We will sing the first two verses.
Beyond the days of hope and mystery, we see a light of faith renewed, and in our longing with thirst for guidance to walk with you day by day. 40 days and nights you guide the steps of our journey.
With us, O God, as we have put our trust in you. Looks like a storm is coming. I like it when it gets like this. I get all mystical. Here's how the Gospel of Luke divides. Chapters 1 to 4. From the birth to the temptations. Imagine being filled with spirit, touched by God, moved from heaven, and tempted. And unique to the Gospel of Luke, only Luke says the devil left him for a more opportune time. Matthew and Mark, on the other hand, see the temptation account as definitive, complete, over and done with. But Luke is more realistic. Just when you think you've conquered everything, here comes a new glitch. Here comes another problem. Here comes a different perspective. Luke implies that all through the ministry of Jesus, all through the work of Jesus, there was contention. Temptation sometimes, we're tempted not to stand for something, not to open our mouth, and not to do anything. Sometimes we're not tempted to do outright evil, we're tempted not to do anything good. We become afraid. Well, if I say that, they won't like me anymore. Well, if I open up that perspective, I'll be rejected. That's how I live most of my life. I'm always afraid of what somebody's going to think. When you live your life like that, in that constant fear of what someone's going to think, then you don't serve another person. Sometimes the greatest people in your life are the people that caused you some trouble, who invited you to think in ways you never thought before, to act in ways you may have never thought before. It can seem like it's a bad day, but it's a turnaround day. You become aware of your potential. Become aware of your inwardness. Then he goes to Nazareth, where he was raised. Of course, Jesus can't go anywhere. He can't go to a table. He can't go to a synagogue. He can't go to a holy place. He can't even go to a nightclub without getting in trouble. And if you think he doesn't go to a nightclub, what in the world do you think he's doing when he goes to Jericho? Jericho wasn't exactly known as the holy place where people went to pray. Geographically, it's the lowest place on earth. Morally, it wasn't too high either. When the journey to Jerusalem is about to come to a conclusion, Jesus goes to the lowest place on earth, Jericho, where he meets a man up a tree who's notorious for sinfulness, and Jesus says to him, I have to have dinner in your house. Jesus, stop it. Why do you have to have dinner in everybody's house when those are the kind of people we're trying to ignore? We're trying to get rid of them. Did you ever come to church and say, I need some serenity in my life. I need some peace in my life. I can't wait to go to church. I'll go to church and I'll calm down. I'll center myself in Jesus. I'll be filled with the Spirit. I'll percolate with virtue. And then the homily and the gospel and the music is all about loving your enemy. Doing good to those who hate you. One woman screamed at me one day, why should I love people that hate me? I said, I don't know, I'm on your side. Well, where'd you get that nonsense from? I said, Jesus, you know how he is. Is that in the Bible? I said, yeah, unfortunately. I did everything in my power to shake it to see if those words would fall out, but they wouldn't. He even rose from the dead and appeared to the people who abandoned him. You know, sometimes when you get mugged, you sort of get hard. When you get mugged, you might get mad, angry. Not Jesus. You can kill him. Go on, kill Jesus, and he gives you his life. You can't even kill him. He gives you your life, his life, before you take it. He even said in John's gospel, no one takes my life, I freely give it. You're being executed, for goodness sakes, but I freely give it. Is this what you want? You can have it. Did I ever tell you about my grandmother? My dad's mom, the only grandmother I knew. I never knew there were grandmothers on the mother's side. My mother was an orphan. I was about 14 years old and my dad came banging on my door. Tommy, we have to go down and help Grandma. We think she's been mugged. I said, I doubt it. I think we better pray for the man who tried to mug her. I mean, after all, she's 86, infirm, out of it, arthritic, but she's dangerous. Sure enough, we went down. And there was a young man sitting at the table eating. He tried to break into her house. She was walking past a window. And she saw a young man trying to climb in the window. So she did what any 80-some-year-old woman would do. She grabbed him by the neck. She pulled him through the window and threw him to the floor. And then told him to get up, go outside, and knock on the door. And like a complete idiot, probably in shock, he went outside, closed the door, knocked on it. She opened it and said, hello, can I help you? He said, I'm hungry. She said, I'm married. Come in, have dinner. She gave him dinner. My father, Pittsburgh steel worker, his brother, you know, the tough guys. That's what I had to grow up with. Let's eat nails, go down and beat somebody up, and then pray the rosary. I never quite got that. These rough, tough men with a tender devotion to Mary. Well, I guess there's hope for anybody. There's the two boys in their late 40s standing in front of their mother. They want to kill them. She said, oh, stop it. Sit down and have dinner with your brother. She adopted him. She got him a job. She went down to the Pittsburgh Press, went into the editorial board, or the president of the company or something, said, George, give my son, I didn't know you had another son. It's none of your business. Give my son a job. I don't have any job. Yes, you do. You've been embezzling money for years. You want me to tell your wife, give him a job. I remember when he died. He was a sweet, tender man. My grandmother can't even be mugged right. She turns it into the occasion for the greater love. Let me tell you something about Jesus. Seventh chapter of Luke. Really wonderful chapter. If you think I want to do a retreat on the fourth chapter of John, I want to do another one on the seventh chapter of Luke. It's one of those chapters you could just pull right out of the New Testament and rejoice. I'd like to share with you now the first 10 verses. And remember, this is the chapter where Jesus is accused of being a glutton and a drunkard. And you get that reputation because you eat too much and you drink too much with the wrong people. All you have to say to Jesus is, there's some wrong people over there, and he'll go, oh, wow, I can't wait to meet them. And then we go, no, 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 you're a holy man. You have to be in a holy place. Here's some incense. Here's a candle. Here's a sanctuary. Yeah, but when they were lost and could not find a way to me, I loved them more than ever. Some people think mercy is the prayer. Other people think mercy is the way of life. Luke says he went back to Capernaum. That's the place he called his hometown. He may have been born in Bethlehem, raised in Nazareth, but the place he called home was Capernaum, down by the lake. You know how it is? You may have been born in one place, raised in another, but there's a place you call home. There's a place you call your own. There's a place where you find your niche. He went back home. Now, what you need to know about Galilee at the time of Jesus is under Roman military occupation. Much like we saw yesterday, the Christmas story takes place in the hill country of Judea, which is the killing fields of Herod. To go back to Capernaum with the reputation he has in the first six chapters of Luke is to put his life on the line. Because Luke tells us there was a centurion there. And I don't know about you, but when I'm in the seventh chapter of Luke and I hear there was a centurion, the hair on the back of my head goes up in the air. Because it's a centurion that executed him. So there's a vivid connection between Luke 7 and Luke 23. Standing at the cross was the executioner, the centurion. This is a Roman. This is the enemy. This would be like saying, I went back to my home in Clayton, and there was a man from ISIS. Suppose ISIS had an outpost down next to the CVS store. Would you go home? The centurion had a slave that he treated like a son. Oh, dear. The slave was very dear to him, so endearing that the slave was like a son. The centurion sent some Jewish friends to go to Jesus and plead for help. See, here's Luke's ideal church. It's all the wrong people doing all the right things. They're supposed to be hating each other. They're supposed to be afraid of each other. Luke takes natural-born enemies and turns them into exemplars of virtue. The Roman centurion had the slave he treats like a son. Do you know how slaves are treated? When the slave is no longer able to do any work, you kill it. You get rid of it. At least a vacuum cleaner has valuable parts, but a sick slave, you just slice his head off and get another one in the slave market. But this centurion is an untypical Roman. This centurion is an untypical occupier. He loves his slave to the point where his slave is a son, and the slave's son fell sick, and the centurion's heart was broken. He had Jewish friends. How do you make friends out of people that are supposed to be enemies? There's always men and women and children in the world like that. You may even be like that. You may have children who are like that. They bring home people of the wrong race. They bring home people of the wrong religion. They bring home people from the wrong neighborhood. One man yelled at his son, "Why do you act like that with those people? Those people are out to get us." And the son looked at his father and said, "It's the way you raised me, Dad, to trust and love everyone. But I didn't mean them." "Well, then who did you mean?" So the Hebrew people went to Jesus and said, "He really deserves your help. He even built for us a synagogue. He loves us." If the Roman centurion built the synagogue would have been unclean. You see what's happening here? See, Luke is devastating with this. In 10 verses, he takes natural enemies and crosses all the boundaries. Crosses all the boundaries. All the wrong people do all the right things. You may know people like that. I bet you are people like that. Jesus went with them to the house of the centurion. Hold on. While Jesus was walking to the door of the centurion sent out messengers who said, "I too am a person in charge. I say to one, go, and he goes. I say to another one, come, and he comes. I have soldiers under me. I order one to do this, and he does it. Lord, I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Say but the word, and my servant shall be made well." The Roman centurion is keeping Jewish kosher laws. "I'm not worthy to have you under my roof. Simply say the word, and my servant shall be made well." And Jesus exclaimed, "I've never seen such faith as this, not even among my own people." You know, I can't prove this. And I don't mean to be silly. I really do try to be somewhat sophisticated. Maybe even Bridget's intelligence every once in a while. But I think when we make those lists of who we don't like and who we fear and who we hate, that Jesus gets a hold of that list and goes into the house anyway. I've tried to take political positions. I've tried to take logical positions. And I always get messed up because deep down in my heart somewhere, I really do love Jesus. I think sometimes we love the doctrine of Jesus. We like the statue of Jesus. We like the image of Jesus. We like what we get out of Jesus. But do we really love him for what he stands for what he does, for how he is? I love my grandma. But I'm not quite so sure if somebody was breaking into my house, I'd adopt them. I'm a pacifist, and I would be tempted to shoot them first. But if you love him, how can you hate them? And notice how he rejoices. I've never seen such faith as this. Anywhere, he's rejoicing. And from that moment on, the slave was cured. Well, as best as we can determine in the history of the liturgy, from ancient times, these words of a Roman centurion who belonged to the military to put Jesus to death, his words have been burned into the Eucharistic liturgy. You and I never go to communion without hearing the words, "Lord, I am not worthy to receive you. Say but the word," and we change it to, "My soul shall be healed." But I wonder if we don't need to get a little bit more biblical. "Lord, I am not worthy to receive you. Say but the word, and everyone I fear will be healed, and everyone I hate will be healed, and everyone I fear to love will be lifted up." For the most radical thing you will ever do is to receive the bread of his presence and the wine of his love. Because like my grandmother said, "Tommy, you become what you eat." I think I was about 4 when she said that, and my eyes went like this. "You become what you eat." And I grabbed another chocolate chip cookie and ate it. And to this day, I imagine one day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be a chocolate chip cookie. Then I discovered my grandmother got that from St. Augustine. Come like Jesus. Now let's challenge it again, because I know, you know, we're religious people, so we have to be worthy. No, we've got to be worthy. "Father, I'm not worthy." I know you're not worthy. It's not about you being worthy. It's about you being loved. I love how people say, "I'm worthy to go to communion." Doesn't even sound right. Imagine if you went up to your spouse and you said, "Honey, I have something to say to you." "You know, I'm worthy of you. Whenever I see people fall in love, they say things, 'Father, I can't believe she said yes.' I said, 'That makes 2 of us." "I agree with her mother. She certainly could have done better." You don't even look compatible. He said, I know. She loves me. And I'm not worthy of her. I said, you know what, John? Never forget that. Never forget that. Because that's what love is. It's not two people who are worthy. It's not two people who are compatible. It's two people who are madly in love. When you come to this altar, it's the madness of love. Jesus, you got to be kidding. You can't love me. Do you know what I've done? Yes. Oh, yeah, you do. But I'm not worthy. I know, I didn't call the worthy. I called those I love. Church is called to be merciful. Church is called to be holy because it wants to be like Jesus, who went back home to Capernaum and didn't meet his friends, but public enemy number one, and rejoiced in the faith of the man who was supposed to be the enemy. So the next time you call yourself unworthy, the next time you call yourself failed, the next time you call yourself despicable, the next time you come up with 150 reasons why you're no good, don't forget, you're loved anyway. Holy Community, hear now the gospel.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. When he had finished all his words to the people, he entered Capernaum. A centurion was there, had a slave who was ill and about to die, and he was valuable to him. When he heard about Jesus, he sent elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and to save the life of his slave. They approached Jesus and strongly urged him to come, and saying, he deserves to have you do this for him, for he loves our nation, and he built the synagogue for us. And Jesus went with them. But when he was only a short distance from the house, the centurion sent friends to tell him, Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you enter under my roof. Therefore, I did not consider myself worthy to come to you, but say the word, and let my servant be healed. For I too am a person subject to authority, with soldiers subject to me. And I say to one, go, and he goes. And to another, come here, and he comes. And to my slave, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him, and turning, said to the crowd following him, I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. When the messengers returned to the house, they found the slave in good health. The Gospel of the Lord.
Surely.
All the wrong people doing all the right things. All the people who ought not to be in the same place, forming a dynamic community. And Jesus, filled with spirit, is astonished at the faith he experiences. What you have to love about Jesus, he's not always the actor. He's not always the powerful one. He's not always the one who does something. He has that wonderful ability to receive what another person gives, no matter how profound or feeble it might be. Chapter 7 continues. May I share with you for a few moments a text that's endearing to me. But there's something about this text I wish I could do. It's Luke chapter 7, verses 11 to 17, and it's unique to the Gospel of Luke. So unique is this to Luke's Gospel that where Jesus goes is nowhere mentioned in the Hebrew Bible. My translation would say, he decided to go to the middle of nowhere and meet nobody in particular. Let's go on the journey and see what radical discipleship looks like. See what radical hospitality looks like in another dimension. As I pointed out to you, I was stationed at St. Francis on Oak Grove. Had a wonderful time there, especially fighting with Monsignor Varney, if you remember him. People told me, you got to be scared to death of Monsignor Varney. We were sitting at the table one day, and he said to me, you're one of those scripture people, right? I said, indeed I am. He said, I haven't read a book in 40 years. I said, it shows. The pastor, Father Mackey, fell in the soup and almost drowned. We had to revive him. He was such a wonderful man. So I got a book and gave it to Monsignor. And we studied it together. Everybody told me to be afraid of him. Everybody told me we'd mean. Everybody told me you could get in your face. He was a kitty cat. Be careful of those people. You don't always have to deep down under all that exterior, there's a human being in pain. Sometimes there's a human being who's afraid. But sometimes there's a human being who's trying to test you to see if you have any guts. That's what I love about people like Monsignor Varney. 6 months after he died, I was driving down 680, and one of those Armstrong roof commercials came on, and I almost crashed the car because Monsignor Varney replaced the roof of the church with an Armstrong roof and made a commercial. And I thought he was risen from the dead because the commercial said, "This is Monsignor Varney," and I almost crashed the car. He's coming back to get me. But then I remember that night when we started reading the Bible together, like we never heard of it before. Be careful when people tell you things about other people. Meet them anyway. Be careful when people tell you something about yourself. Meet yourself anyhow. Gotta love this Jesus. He takes his disciple after this incredible event in Capernaum and goes to a village of no significance. It's as if Jesus goes to travel agents and say, "Where's the place nobody goes? That's where I want to go." And he goes to a village named Nain. And that is on the way into the village with his disciples after that astonishing event in Capernaum where he's rejoicing. I've never seen such faith as this. He meets a widow who's in a funeral procession, and the dead boy is the only child of the woman who's a widow. Luke can take one sentence and paint absolute devastation. And whenever I read that text, I go back to St. Francis, to that church. Because they baptized a little baby, and everybody got mad at me because they didn't have paperwork. I was baptizing, and this couple came in with this cute little girl, just born. "Father, would you baptize her?" "Well, do you have any paperwork?" "No." "Oh, but our son was baptized here. He has paperwork." I said, "Oh, I guess that's sufficient." I said, "Can you wait till I baptize everybody else, and then we'll do it together and see if we can do some paperwork?" Because I had just been instructed by the powers to be, "You need proper paperwork, or it doesn't stick." So I made a judgment. There's a couple of priests here tonight. You know what it's like when you make a judgment? You go with your pastoral gut feeling. You pay attention to your heart, even if you don't have paperwork. So I baptized the baby, and I went back and I told the parish. Of course, the pastor was fine with it because he's a sweetheart. But everybody else, "You violated the rules." I did. Deliberately and consciously. But not arrogantly. It was a judgment I made. "Well, we have to have a meeting, a parish council meeting, a parish meeting, a liturgical meeting, a theological meeting, and we have to call the people who are going to repair the roof too." Jeez. I said, "When are we scheduling the execution so I can call home and say goodbye?" I mean, for goodness sakes, it was a baptism. I have a cute little kid. The pastor called me in 3 days later. I said, "Bill, this is getting ridiculous." He said, "Tom, sit down. You know the baby you baptized 3 days ago?" "Yes." "She's dead." parents were going to the supermarket. A drunk driver went through a red light, crashed into the car, and the baby died. The parents want to see you. Do you want me to drive you to the hospital? Yeah. The mothers looked at me and gave me a photograph of the baptism. We wanted you to have this. I don't believe for a moment that I did something that God can't do. But I can't get over this. You would give me a photograph of a precious moment when your daughter was killed. What kind of faith is this? So the text I'm about to share with you breaks my heart because I want to go to the cemetery where I put the body of that baby and say to her, arise. I don't want to bury any more children or babies. I don't care if they're 3 weeks old or 103 years old. It breaks my heart. Luke says, when the Lord saw her, here's Jesus now coming from a moment of amazement. I've never seen faith like this. And walking into the village, there's a widow coming the other way whose only child is dead. And for the first time in Luke's gospel, outside the infancy account, Luke calls Jesus Lord. And the word Lord in the New Testament is the word for Jesus risen, the word for Jesus in power and might. But he's not so risen, not so powerful, and not so mighty that he doesn't know how to cry, that he doesn't know how to have his heart broken. For Luke says, when the Lord saw her, his heart was broken with compassion. It's one of those little details that you can't delete from the gospel. I listen to some Christians that always talk about Jesus as the powerful one, the Lord, the giver of life. But he's also the brokenhearted one. Don't cry. And he walked over to the dead boy. And he said, little one, I say to you, arise. And the little one got up and started walking around. The disciples and the multitude of people were astonished. They had the same amazement that Jesus had in Capernaum. The people of Nain and the disciples now have in this moment. They were praising God and saying, a great prophet has risen among us. God has visited his people. But there's something missing. That's not where the miracle is, as far as I'm concerned. There's a little detail in chapter 7, verses 11 to 17. And this is what it says. Jesus gave the boy back to his mom. See, everybody else was running around, caught up in spirit, beside themselves with joy. Look what he did. He's risen. And there's that moment. Luke captures it beautifully. Only in Luke. Luke sees the little boy. And you can see the little boy risen from the dead, perhaps somewhat confused, wondering where he is. And everybody else is singing and praising. And Luke says, Jesus gave the boy back to his mother. Between you and I, I go back to the cemeteries when I did parish work in Oakland. To this day, I stand over the grave of little Sarah. Arise. I want to give you back to your mom. I want to give you back to your dad. What I keep forgetting is that mom and dad gave their child to God because they have a faith I can't imagine. I get angry at God when stuff like this happens. But the mother said to me, I have an angel in heaven, don't I, Father? Yes, you do. Can I just give her back? You gotta love Jesus. He's not so rigid, he's not so powerful, he's not so mighty that he can't remember to give the child back to his mom. You can just see Jesus. Hey, little one, how are you? Did you enjoy the sleep? I did, sir. Who are you? I'm Jesus. I lived in Nazareth, and now I have a little place in Capernaum down by the lake. You want to come visit me sometime? We can go fishing together. But forget all that for the moment. What's your name? My name's Jimmy. Jimmy, look who's over there. Mom! Jimmy! The mother and child reunion. So when you're praising God and you're shouting hosannas to Jesus, make sure you keep a little part of your heart open to be sensitive to that little detail that Jesus never forgets. Who's he reconciling now? Who's he loving now? What child and parent is he reuniting?
Healing at the mercy.
is now begin. Lift up your voice and sing. Rejoice, give thanks to our Redeemer King. With grateful hearts come worship Him.
Monsignor Varney and I blessed each other a couple of hours, maybe a day before he died. He taught me a thing or two about parish work, what it is to fight for people you love. Father Bill Mackey taught me to be tender even when life is tough. Tender to others, tender to yourself. That couple who lost their child needlessly. To this day, I'm astonished by their faith. I look at people like you. I can just imagine some of the suffering, heartbreak, fears, and hesitations you have. But I invite you tonight, be free. Don't be afraid to be yourself. You don't have to be fearful because somebody else invites you to be fearful. You don't have to be spiteful because somebody else demands it. Never be afraid to hear that word of God that's in the depth of your mind, heart, and soul that says live, breathe, and be yourself. Not only receive grace from God, but please be grace from God. Not only ask God to answer your prayer, but be the answer to someone else's prayer. Rise from your fear as Jesus rose from his tomb. But when I think about that woman, don't cry. In that moment, when the heart of Jesus was broken, using the words of St. Paul from the Epistle to the Galatians, Jesus Christ was crucified to her. Long before Jesus was crucified to a cross, he crucified himself to her. He crucified himself to you, and he crucified himself to me. Not in an act of pain and suffering, but solidarity and communion. That's why many of you have had the courage to learn to be tender, merciful, and bold in faith, up out of the heartbreak in your life. Anybody can believe when it goes your way. But to be a person of love when it doesn't go your way, to be a person of hope when you have every reason to doubt, and be a person of courage when you have every reason not to believe, is the fundamental story of those of you who are gathered here tonight. You crucified yourself to Jesus, and he crucified himself to you. Not in an act of execution, but solidarity and communion, as if we can do together what no one of us can do alone. So yesterday you blessed the book. Tonight, I invite you to bless the cross. The cross is always blessing you. The cross by always bless one another. The cross by which we bless ourselves. Tonight, bless him. Bless the one who has nailed himself to you out of love. Remember, Pilate crucified him so we would forget him. And now we lift high the cross, for he has become unforgettable. 2x2, 4x4, come forth and bless the one who blesses you. Then we'll conclude with a prayer. Don't cry. Don't cry. And he placed his hands on the little one. Little one, I say to you, arise. And the little one got up. And Jesus gave him back to his mother. Please give him to the world. Be at peace. Love you.
Please join us in singing our concluding song on your song sheets, verses 3 and 4 of Beyond the Days.
Beyond the days of hope and mystery, we see a light of faith renewed, and in our longing we thirst for guidance to walk with you day by day. Gentleness be there
beyond the days of
on the days of mystery.
We see a light of faith renewed, and in our longing we thirst for guidance to walk with you. Day by day, on our land.
be the promise of our lives.
Beyond the days of hope,
the days of mystery,
we see a light of faith renewed, and in our long we thirst for guidance to walk with you.